80s couch potatoes across the country, around the world, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr.
And I'm Evelyn Travia, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies.
Yes, you are. We have a new guest host. This is Emily from Glee Cast. Is it G-L-E-E-C-A-S-T?
G-L-E-E-K-A-S-T.
Oh.
Yeah, see, if it was the C, then I would be a cast member of Glee, which would have meant I would either have won the Glee Project or I would have any kind of talent or have a contact, if you will, with the Glee world, which I have none. So.
Well, and in this one, you're just a purple little monkey from another planet.
Pretty much, yeah. Okay. Whatever works.
Does that make any sense to you? Do you even get that joke?
Purple people eater. But.
Zan and Jaina, the Wonder Twins, they have a monkey called
Gleek.
Oh,
see, okay, this is the thing, because I have no idea what the Wonder Twins are.
Oh,
my
wow,
co-host
struck a chord here.
Does. So I guess I don't think it was a generation thing. It was just something I was not aware of. I apparently grew up in a bubble and did not know it.
Ah. Just like John Travolta did in that movie. Did you get that joke though? The boy in the plastic.
Yes, of course, the boy in the plastic.
Well, how do you not know who Zan and Jaina are if you like are aware of that piece of pop culture?
What year was this? what year was this bit of pop culture you were referring to?
Right around the boy in the plastic bubble, late '70s, early '80s.
Okay, so it was I was born in 82, so it may have been before I was born. And regardless, I was maybe paying attention to other kinds of media. I was born into a Star Wars family, so there was that. I had older.
You make it like Star Wars is such a long leap to the Super Friends.
Well, you know, there were rules in the household, maybe.
You had rules against the Super Friends?
No, I just don't know that they were invited into the household.
You grew up in a strange family.
I'm not arguing that at all. No. We were special people. See, we had a video camera before a lot of other people did. Oh. So we used to enjoy, like, we would do a lot of court TV segments in my house. That
what?
Seemed to, like, pass the time a lot. I don't know why, but that was a highly.
You just, like, prosecute the neighbors?
No, it was usually us. It was usually, like, because I was the youngest, I was just always all of the witnesses, and then my brothers could be the lawyers.
Oh.
And then, like, when my mom would stop, like, washing the dishes, she'd come out and be the judge and just, you know, have a line.
She was with dishpan hands and, like rubber gloves on as a judge, and she's, like, wiping the sweat from her head, going, well, I believe that according to yada yada habeas corpus, you win.
It was something like that. It's amazing I didn't grow up to be a lawyer or a filmmaker.
You should get those clips and put them on YouTube.
Oh, they'd be terrifying. Because we also made a lot of horror movies back in the day. So there was the thing that actually used to make me cry a lot as a kid was when we made a, like, just a, I don't remember what the theme was, but it was a horror movie. And I, as a four-year-old, get shot in the head. And after getting shot in the head with, you know, this is the late 80s, so every kid's like a Savini fan and is doing, like, so my brothers are doing prosthetics on me. And after getting shot in the head, I say, I didn't do it, and die, which I thought made sense.
Doesn't quite work in a biological sense.
I didn't know that because I was four.
Okay.
And I'd seen movies where people get shot in the head and get up and then go and eat or sing and dance. So how was I supposed to know? But for years, it used to be the joke around the house was that Emily was a bad actress because she didn't understand when, you know, the brain stops working.
That may also be the director's fault.
I would agree. It's always the director's fault. Mark Wahlberg in The Happening, as much as you can, you know, make fun of it, somebody.
I love The Happening. I'm sorry.
Somebody kept those moments in. Well, I think The Happening is fascinating as a film where every decision is made wrong. And I love that M. Night Shyamalan now says it was intentional. Mm. I just think that's adorable when directors do that.
Yeah, independent directors do that all the time. You just can't swing that when you're at his level.
Well, unless they, like, don't really, they still don't want to, like, be in on it, like Birdemic, where the director is still pretty convinced he made a beautiful love story and a parable about global warming. And good for him.
Yeah.
Good for him.
Cheap. Anyways, let's talk about, let's get the contact information. We're almost done with the segment, but if you go to fatguysinthemovies.com, you can catch the show for those listening on the radio or elsewhere. You can go to iTunes and search Fat Guys Network, and it'll get all the shows on there, or Fat Guys in the Movies. Go to facebook.com/FGATM and like us, because we're narcissists and we love to be liked.
Everybody should be liked.
Yeah, email us at fatguys@filmschoolrejects.com, voicemail 740-205-6456. We're waiting for some awesome voicemail. And go to iTunes and leave us a review, because, again, we just want to hear about ourselves. Anyways, Emily, tell us real quickly who you are and what you do. Obviously, you do a show about Gleek the monkey.
I do a show about Gleek the monkey. Occasionally, it's also about Glee the TV show. We're not necessarily what you'd call Gleeks, I think, because we're pretty hard on the show. And so, you know, we're not always just praising it. We have a lot of issues. Especially
after that second season, how can you not be?
Yeah, exactly. Oh, my God. If you didn't, then I don't know what show you were watching. But yes, that's Gleecast with a K in the middle. I also am a blogger, so I have a – but now I can call it a website because I finally bought my .com URL, so now I sound fancier.
Wow.
But that's primarily horror movies and really bad films like Cool as Ice or The Blind Side, whatever kind of inspires me to write really long reviews of it. And that is at deadlydollshouse.com. And then I'm also on the Girls on Film radio podcast, which is where a bunch of women talk about movies that generally are not aimed at women. So.
Ah, that's true.
Indeed, yeah. We did Fear City last week, Abel Ferrara's 80s, very sleazy, mean New York movie, that kind of thing.
Cool. Yeah. We're going to rip through these first two reviews because we only got about less than 2 minutes left in the segment.
Okay, but, I talk fast.
We've got we haven't seen either of these because they didn't screen them, at least not where I'm from. One's Conan the Barbarian. Jason Momoa stars as the warrior with rippling muscles on a quest to avenge his family.
I see a journey. A man
crossing the sands.
A knight.
A warrior.
Your paths will merge.
Behold! In despair! Your new master!
No man shall live in chains.
Do you want to see this? Are you interested? Are you?
You know, I'm a fan of the like medieval barbarian movies. Somehow I've never seen the original Conan. I was more of a Beastmaster girl, I think, because of the ferrets. But my fear is that it's directed by, is it Marcus Nispel?
Yeah, it's the guy who did Pathfinder.
It's more importantly, it's the guy who did the Friday the 13th remake, which offended me. As a horror fan, it offended me. And I'm not one of those, I hate remakes. No, I'm fine with remakes, but do something with it. And I thought he failed at that, so I'm kind of reluctant to see what he's going to do with Conan.
There are just way too many breasts in that movie for me to not like it.
But they were weird. They were so... None of them moved. I don't know. That was more disturbing to me than anything else that happened in that movie.
I'm okay with that. I hope there's some in Conan. I'm going to go see it. My wife and I are actually going to go. We check it out.
Is it rated R?
It is rated R, but it's we're big fans of Jason Momoa because we used to watch Stargate Atlantis. We actually named our son, his middle name is named after one of the characters.
Is it Momoa?
No, a Ronan.
Oh.
R-O-N-O-N, the character he played at Stargate Atlantis.
I like that there's finally a word to rhyme with Samoa, the Girl Scout cookie.
Ah, yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he's crunchy on the outside and chewy on the inside, I think.
And probably very fattening if you actually ate him.
Delicious. But I have to give it a preemptive suck because we didn't see it. The next one, we're going to take you out on this trailer and we'll talk about it when we get back from the break. And that's Spy Kids 4D, All the Time in the World. Director Robert Rodriguez adds another gimmick, which apparently stinks, to his ongoing series about young Hispanic spies and lots of CGI.
With the Sapphire, we can stop time and the world will end.
Who the heck are these guys?
Enter the panic room now.
Hello, children. I am a spy.
This is a prank.
This is not a prank.
The dog is talking.
High five.
We need the Chronos Sapphire, which he now has in his possession.
Attention, spy kids. Get the necklace back.
First person to get the bad guy wins. Game on.
Welcome back to Fat Guys in the Movies. We went out on the Spy Kids trailer. Not a whole lot we can say about it because they didn't show it early. They didn't screen it. I mean, they screened it for like really top markets, but I don't know. My kids want to see it. My kids are trying to take me to see it, and wondering if they're going to like charge an extra $5 for the 3D and then another $5 for the smell.
What is
card.
It going to smell like? I don't understand.
I'm assuming they're doing it the way they did Polyester. Do you ever see Polyester?
No, but I know of it.
Okay. It's the John Waters, but it was made in 81 and it was a little scratch and sniff card. And so whenever like the number would like show up on screen, I've seen the movie with the blinking.
Right.
You know, but I've not seen it. They don't have the Odorama cards anymore, but what it would do is be like blinking to be like two, and you're supposed to scratch it and smell it and be like, oh, and they come in and they're baking a pie or something like that.
That seems like a lot of work.
Well, it was John Waters.
I mean, for John Waters, I would work hard, but
yeah,
still.
He did it as an homage to William Castle and all the gimmicks that he did.
Right.
Now, but one of the things they would trick you in that, like, there's this one scene in Polyester where Divine's walking and she's like, oh, what's that smell? And you think it's going to be something delicious. And it's somebody's foot.
Right.
She's like, and then somebody sticks a stinky.
Well, for John Waters, somebody's foot is actually the safest thing I think you can get. So.
Delicious. Yes. He loves. We won't even go into what John, because this is one of the radio segments.
I remembered that.
John Waters is not safe talk on.
But he is still wonderful.
He's a cool guy.
He is my dream dinner guest. I would love to share like Stromboli with him.
I actually met him when I was in college. He came to I was in a film club type thing, and he showed up. And I remember asking him this because I said I heard this once, and it was relatively soon after he made Crybaby. And again, I'm going to try to avoid trouble here with the a radio segment. But I said to him, I heard a rumor that. On the set of Crybaby, Johnny Depp he got the intestinal flu.
Oh,
and somebody was trying to sell his sewage.
Okay.
And John goes,
this is post 21 Jump Street. This is when he was even more happening than he was now. Really.
And he was really young and good looking. Mm-hmm. And John's like,
well, he looks the same
now.
Yeah.
He's a vampire. John's like, oh yeah, oh absolutely. I told him he should go into business. I'm like. That's perfect.
I believe that. I do.
Yeah, unending. But anyways, I don't know. Spy Kids, it's going to be better than Shorts, but the first one I thought was really cute. And then
I've never seen any of them, but I don't have kids, so I think that's my excuse.
Yeah, my kids really want to see it. I think they want to see it because of the aroma. It's Aroma Vision.
Oh,
I think
these
is what
gimmicks.
It's called, so it's not Smellorama. But, I mean, everyone always says that, 3D is a gimmick and other people, filmmakers are gimmicks. Robert Rodriguez is an incredibly gimmicky filmmaker.
That's true.
And he stumbles into a good movie every, 5 years. But, anyways, I might see it. It's going to be expensive because I don't want to spend $50.
You're right, and then
you've
got children.
Yeah, because then you got to bring them with you.
You can't, hide them in a jacket or anything when you go in.
I could, but I'm already fat. And they'd look at me and they'd be just like, how do you walk? I could go in one of those little scooters that you see people in the store.
Oh, I envy fat people that can do that.
I hate people because I'm
like it's so unfair. You're just shopping for cereal and you get to drive.
My grandmother would use it because she doesn't have hips that work.
Exactly. And you're not handicapped. You're just fat.
But yeah, when you're just this fat 40-year-old, you'd be like, oh, I'm sorry. Let me go to the ho-ho aisle.
I don't get it.
Anyways, that gets a preemptive suck. Let's talk about One Day really quick. And this one is a profile of a relationship that spans 20 years about a couple who keeps in touch on the same day every year.
And they're both really pretty.
When we were at university, I had a crush on you.
We've never actually met.
Emma Morley.
I'll walk you home.
Sorry, I'm not good at this.
Maybe we could just be friends.
Okay.
We will see each other again.
I know we will.
I'm a disaster.
I'm sure it's not a complete disaster. Come on, everyone's lost at 25.
You're not.
Yeah, well, Emma and I are just good friends.
You sure about that?
Anyway, she's not my type.
Which is exactly why I like her.
The one thing I'll say is, it looked terrible.
It is.
And Anne Hathaway's accents looked terrible. And I like Anne Hathaway. But the thing that actually made me almost stop was when I saw the trailer, I realized, it was directed by the same woman who directed An Education. I loved An Education. And that's not my kind of movie. That's actually one of my reasons for supporting the Oscar 10 nominations.
Mm-hmm.
Because I would never have seen An Education if it wasn't nominated for Best Picture. And I saw it and I actually really liked it. I thought it was a very good film. Carey Mulligan's fantastic. And so with this one, I'm like, well, it's the same director, but I will never see this movie.
This movie is, it was, when it started, it was okay, but it really kind of lathers on the sort of the British words. Like they make a point to use British.
Is her accent as bad as it sounds in the trailer?
It's not good. Yeah. It's not awful. I mean, it's not like Dick Van Dyke and Mary Poppins. Hi, Governor, let's go down. It's not
Poppins.
That. Mary Poppins. No, but it's not good. But it's almost like she's trying too hard. She sounds like she's at a Renaissance festival at times. And they'll just throw in the British vernacular, which should be like, oh, just make sure you're home by 8:30, and stuff like that. You're like,
because
really?
That's when the scones are done.
Yeah, let's go. Just make sure you take a lorry and then come up in the lift.
We'll have crisps and tea.
Let me have a crisp. It's crisp. What is it? What are that? What else do they call? They call crackers.
Biscuits.
Biscuits. Yeah. Oh no. Cookies are biscuits.
Oh God. Jeez. Oh, yeah, what kind of language
is
this?
It just makes no sense. I mean, I've watched, and it's not like I'm calling shenanigans on it because I know that these are real British terms, but I watch a lot of British TV because you end up getting stuff, and like I've watched The Office and I watched Doctor Who, and even stuff that's like not quite. Like, Doctor Who's very much directed at an American audience. They're really pushing it now. But I looked at old Doctor Who, which wasn't. And they don't talk like that. And they don't talk like that.
They're not forcing their biscuits down your throat.
Yeah. So, yeah, that one was... And then it's like, there's always a scene in the movie. There's every now and then you can point to some movies and you can be like, that's the scene where it lost me. And I just totally lost me because they are all jerks. And there's a scene in the middle where I just kind of
really
threw
pretty.
Up my hands. They're very attractive, sure. But I mean, it's like his character, Jim Sturgess's character, kind of turns into this Graham Norton character who's just this nothing TV show host who's only famous for doing this crappy TV show. And then he loses it. It's just depressing. And it's, of course, she's a writer. And I'm like, oh my God.
Oh,
a
I
story
hate movies
about
writer.
Writers. Oh, so.
Because they never actually write. They just look away wistfully, and then by the end of the movie they have a novel that's the most popular thing in the world.
It's so awful, and I was done with it. It sucks. That's the official
it's a shame for that director, but I'm not surprised.
Yeah, that's gonna happen. Let's talk about another one, which I'm curious to get your thoughts on this, and this will probably spill over into the next break, but let's talk a little bit about Fright Night, and that's the remake of the 80s classic about a high school boy who discovers he lives next door to a vampire who does not sparkle.
You know Adam's missing, right?
Right? Kids aren't coming to school. It happens all the time.
I don't know if you're paying attention to roll call, but he's not the only one that's gone.
You're nuts.
This is my son, Charlie, and his girlfriend.
Hi. So Jerry is our new neighbor.
Hey.
Hey.
Now listen to me. We graphed up all the disappearances. That's you right there in the center next to his house.
I really hate to be the one to tell you this, but that guy, your neighbor?
Jerry.
Yeah, he's a vampire.
That is a terrible vampire name. Jerry?
Now, I didn't have any interest, overly interest in it. I do like the original a lot, mostly because I love Chris Sarandon and I love Roddy McDowall, and I think it has a really great tone and spirit about it.
Yeah.
And when I saw the trailer for this one, I realized immediately from watching the trailer, I'm like, wow, this trailer is trying to sell this movie to teenagers, but you could tell this is not a movie that's actually being aimed at them. And so I feel like it's a much smarter
film. I think that's
a
fair way of saying it.
Yeah, doesn't it look like they're trying to push the pretty young girl in the trailer? But it seems like you can tell there's a lot more going on in there. So I'm actually excited for it. I feel like it's been getting good buzz. Did you see it?
It's getting good buzz. Here's my problem with it. There is a, and I'm going to use a term, right now there's a lot of people complaining about the PG-ification of movies. This is rated R. It's not PG. I'm more worried about the WB-ification of movies, and nothing against the WB or Warner Brothers.
The CW, Brothers. I believe.
Or it's the CW now. Yeah, the CW-ification. I know. But every show and every movie now looks like it's cut from that CW Vampire Diaries cloth.
Yeah.
And I've nothing against the Vampire Diaries, but enough is enough. I mean, because you had Twilight, then you had Vampire Diaries, then you have Teen Wolf, then you have this, and everything kind of has that, just made for the teens TV show feel to it. And, you know, with the soundtrack and the characters.
But do you think, is the movie that way or is just the trailer that way?
No, the movie's like that way.
Oh, it's a shame.
Because here's the other thing. I loved the original. Fright Night, I thought, was great. It was one of those movies that was, I loved seeing as a kid. I was like 15 when it came out. It was great because I got to see an R-rated movie and I wasn't old enough to see it. My mom took me. And it was a good, solid vampire story. I will give it that it does not go Twilight on us. And again,
thankfully.
Twilight's fine.
It
has its thing. Well, I mean, it has its fans, and the fans can have.
But
not everything needs to be.
Yeah, it's just my issue with Twilight is just the fact that it is such a bad. The Bella is, I think, like I would never want my teenage daughter reading Twilight.
Oh, it's total emotional pornography for a girl. I mean, that's really what it is. But I mean, this one, it's still a vampire who kills people. So, okay, that's fine. You know what? We have to go to a break here.
Yep.
So when we get back, we'll continue talking about Fright Night. And then we'll talk about a couple other movies and weekend box office and all that good stuff.
All right.
32 miles of hard road, 33 years of tough luck, 44 skulls buried in the ground, crawling down through the muck. Oh, yeah.
And welcome back to Fat Guys of the Movies. We are now in the infamous middle segment in which Emily can swear.
Woohoo! I mean, go ahead and say something.
Fuck yeah! Woohoo! Woo. Balls, liquor, Cut-yay. Knapsack, sucker. That doesn't mean anything. We were talking about knapsacks before we.
That's true.
Before the show, and how dirty it sounds.
It can. Well, I mean, bindlestick is.
Yeah. Well, a bindlestick, for those who don't know, is actually, because we looked this up because it was bothering us. A bindlestick is, if you ever see those old cartoons of hobos with sticks and their stuff
Big
tied
Adventure.
In a bandana.
Pee-wee's Big Adventure. He's carrying a bindlestick.
That's right. Well, yeah, because that's but it's because he's a hobo at that point, isn't he? So. But anyways, that's what a bindle stick is. But yeah, you kind of like be like, oh yeah, rub my bindle stick and lick
my
knapsack.
Knapsack.
Tickle my knapsack.
Ooh, knapsack is even worse.
Well, a knapsack, that's something totally different.
We're creating all weird, different parts of anatomy I didn't know existed.
I know. but anyways, we're going to talk. I got a couple more things to say about Fright Night.
I would like to hear them.
Like I said, I love the original. When I saw this movie, I was always trepidatious because I was like, oh, they're remaking Fright Night. That'll be cool. And then I'm like hearing the people involved. I'm like, that's cool. You know, mm-hmm. Doctor Who is Peter Vincent and Anton Yelchin as the kid. And maybe Colin Farrell will be okay as a vampire. And then I saw the trailer. That's when I was like, got that first taste of the CW-ish.
CW. See, now I'm doing WB.
Boom.
You've made me old.
I've corrupted you. Anyways, and I started watching the movie. Now, the movie's in 3D, and that's important to say. 3D is okay, but it's important to point out it's in 3D because I'm watching the film. I honest to God thought they had the reels mixed up.
Mm-hmm.
But with a 3D movie, it's digitally projected. It's all one source file. You cannot mix up the reels in a 3D movie. So I'm like, okay, no, it has to be in this order.
And that's strange.
Yeah, and because they rush through the Evil Ed character. And Evil Ed was so iconic in the original movie. They kind of rush his character. And the whole thing is it takes place in Las Vegas, but like this little suburb outside of Las Vegas. And Colin Farrell plays the most obvious vampire ever because he kills all of his neighbors in this tiny little town. And I'm like, no, that's not what you do.
Were they playing their music really loudly?
I don't know. They're just, yes, because that starts off and like Evil Ed's like, hey, you know, your neighbor's a vampire. Look at all these people have died or disappeared around your house. And I'm like, nobody's noticed this.
Like, no, but seriously. Yeah, he's right.
I mean, it's just, I'm like, okay, that's kind of crazy. I mean, whereas in the original movie, you know he's a vampire coming because it's called Fright Night.
Well,
right?
And you know? Also have, in the original, it's Herman from Herman's Head, is always who he'll be to me, is a vampire nut. Like he...
Yeah.
And now, does that carry over in this one or no?
No. I mean, Evil Ed is, and then he kind of brings him in. And so the character of Charlie Brewster isn't terribly well formed and... You know, and Colin Farrell walks around, he constantly looks like he has heartburn.
Oh.
So he's like, oh.
So he doesn't step on the sexy toes of Christopher Sarandon, is what you're saying. Because Christopher Sarandon has some sexy ass toes.
Christopher Sarandon really pulled it off because he could be evil, he could be charming, mm-hmm. Colin Farrell's just kind of like, I'm good looking, so that's all I need to do. You know, he's sort of like going out on a, it's like watching him in this movie is what I would imagine going out on a date with a supermodel would be like. Where you'd be like, yeah, I got a supermodel. And then you'd sit there and you'd be like, what, I got to talk to you now?
Because
I'm gorgeous and that's enough, isn't it?
See, you know? I almost, that's a shame because I felt after In Bruges, I was kind of thinking, you know, Colin Farrell will get a pass for me. Because I never thought anything
he's
of
done
him, and
great
I loved
work.
Him
yeah.
in Bruges. Mm-hmm. And after that, I'm like, you know, I think he's got it together again. I think once he got past that, like, Hollywood heartthrob phase, which really never fit him, maybe now he's, you know, thinking about his roles better and, you know, finding the right parts and doing the right movies. And that's why I thought it was an interesting choice for him to do Fright Night. But it's mildly disappointing to hear that.
Yeah, and then they have Peter Vincent, which part of the charm of Peter Vincent was he was this has-been. Mm-hmm. In the original movie, he was this has-been who was just doing this shitty little TV show.
Yeah.
And
which
that's
I guess you
what
couldn't
was
do
so
today
good.
Anyway, because you don't
Yeah,
have
you really couldn't.
Hosts.
But you could have had, you could have done something, because they basically make Peter Vincent Chris Angel. And he's like at the MGM Grand or whatever hotel they're at. I forget what it is. I don't think it's Grand. I think it's like the Stratosphere.
It's not Circus Circus.
Yeah.
Or my favorite slots of fun where you can get dollar hot dogs and play dollar blackjack.
Dollar hot dogs.
I swear, if you go to Vegas, people.
Those
Lots
won't give
fun.
You diarrhea
nope.
at all.
And you can also play dollar blackjack for hours.
Well, yeah, but you know what's funny is, like, I've been to Vegas and I love Vegas, but even like the big casinos, if you go to like the nickel slots, like it's you almost feel like a pervert in the nickel slots, because it, not that you're doing anything perverted, but you kind of like, you're like, well, people are staring at me because you're just like paying for the nickels. It's just, go to the quarter slots at least, you know. It's just and maybe you don't get that. Is that but slots of fun, isn't that just a giant slot machine house?
No, it's not at all. You're wrong. Slots of fun is like the sort of butt end of Circus, which is Circus is,
because I've driven by it. Yeah, I've seen it.
It's, I mean, Circus is where parents go because their kids can hang out there, so parents can gamble while they're
I've taken my kids.
I mean, it's perfect. But next to that, it's lots of fun, is this tiny little hole in the wall casino, and they have tables. So they have tables and they have slots. I went and sat down at a blackjack table where it was $1.00 for blackjack. And so you're sitting there, you're like splitting twos, you're hitting on 12s, you're doing whatever you want because it's only a dollar. And by the end of the night, I was there 8 hours, and I think I made $20. And you know, hey, I could have lost a lot more if I'd gone to a different table.
See, that's the problem. But the problem with that for me is, like, then when you win, you're like, I won $2.
Which is the equivalent if I'd been playing at a $10 table of something much more. But yeah, then you
And that's the thing with nickel slots as well, because if you do the nickel slots, you'd be like, jackpot, you get $25. And you're like, that's not much.
Not when I've already lost $300 playing a nickel slot. Because slots are such a freaking con, because you have to keep... Like, you're not going to win anything unless you play all of the, you know, unless you put the maximum in there.
Oh, yeah. It's not a point. You have to bid all the lines.
So a penny slot, which I played penny slots before. And penny slots, you're spending a quarter every round.
The penny slots are more expensive than, I've seen, they'll be like, play 89 lines. And you're like, really?
Okay, it's only a penny. Wait a minute.
It's a buck every time you hit that. Whereas you can do like 3 lines in a quarter slot. So slots are fun, but, you know, they're okay.
Blackjack is where it's at.
But yeah. Anyways, but in Fright Night, getting back to Fright Night, it embodies everything that's wrong with remakes, where they change characters and they don't make them as good, and they change the parts, they update, they're like, we got to make it modern, and they update the parts and they over update it.
So did it bring anything new that was there a reason for this movie existing? I guess is my question.
There's a couple things that are interesting. Okay. There's a couple points where you're like, oh, that's kind of neat. And I'm not going to go into what they are, but there are points where you're just like, well, that's a new twist, and that's okay. I mean, it's not an awful movie. It's not One Day, but it's not worth doing the remake. And like I said, it just doesn't flow properly, and it's
strange.
Just doesn't. And it's not scary, and it's not terribly violent.
Is it funny?
No, that's the other thing. Is weird. There's a certain level of camp to the original,
right? Which is what I assumed they were going for. Because I mean, just the title, like it, Fright Night, does not sound like a scary movie. I can't imagine they're really trying to pull in people that are going to see Final Destination, or you know.
I saw Fright Night and Final Destination on the same night, and they were kind of about the same level of quality.
Well, then I might love it, because I love to be some Final Destination 5.
Well, but that one was at least goofy at times.
Yeah, and the bar was not quite at the same place.
No. And the other thing is, and this is me being a pig and misogynist, but when you have an R-rated movie, put some fucking tits in it, for crying out loud, because you did not see Emma Jean's poots.
Well,
and
of course not. She's a CW actress, right?
No, is she?
Wait, this is for Fright Night.
Yeah, for Fright Night. Yeah, she was in 28 Weeks Later is where she was from, but she was like 14.
Oh, her, right. I get freaked out by that, because everybody saw her when she was like 13. I have no problem with boobs. Hey, no, it's fine. But I just always find that always shakes me off, when it's like, wait a minute, but don't you remember her when she was still drinking milk?
When she was still drinking milk,
and it was because she really had to get her vitamins,
because she needed it, because she was,
because
she's
not
a growing
because it
girl.
Was like for a sexy milk mustache commercial.
It wasn't for the I got cum on my lip milk mustache.
Exactly, it was the, just because it was what kids did.
Oh yeah, no, but anyway, Fright Night. It could have been.
Does Colin Farrell get naked at least? Do I see his butt?
No. You see, like, I think he might. I don't even know if he has his shirt off. I think he does at one point. But like, for example, there's in the original movie,
for anybody here.
When Charlie sees the prostitute go into the house, and he's like, because he walks by her in the street, and she's this really hot girl, and she's like, hey, how you doing? And he's like, oh, and he sees her go in, and then he hears him scream, and he sees a Jerry. That they do make a joke, the whole like, oh, a vampire named Jerry, and that's funny. That's in the trailer, of course.
Chuckle.
But and then he pulls a window down, hears him scream, and then they find out on the news that the prostitute's dead. Well, in this one, it's not a prostitute. It's like somebody who lives down the road, and he like calls the police, and he's like, the guy next door, I heard a scream, and he's and I think he's attacked a woman, and the cops come, and they just like chuckle it off, and I'm like, I'm pretty sure that. No matter who you are, if you get a report that somebody's in the house and is being harmed, they're going to want to at least see that person. Well, and they don't ask that. And then he like sneaks in the house, and he, again, this is in the trailer. He sneaks in the house and he finds these like back rooms with where he keeps his victims to like drink to feed off of them. And my point is that they're like, he'll never believe me, it's a vampire. I'm like, why don't you just say I snuck into the guy's house and he's got slave rooms?
Well, because at that point the cops go into the house and the slave rooms have been turned into pantries and studies.
Yeah,
because
but
they're
it's just,
very quick at redecorating.
I don't know. It's just. It was just,
yeah,
it's
well,
that's
not, a
shame. I didn't like it. I was kind of looking forward to it, but then when I saw it, because I, from the first trailer, I was like, well, this isn't going
to
be good.
Yeah, I felt like they were trying to sell it to a different audience, but I had faith that the movie would still be good. So I'm a little bummed to hear that.
Some people are liking it.
Yeah,
just not me.
I thought it was getting good buzz, but
All right. Well, let's move on. Let's talk to another movie that's getting a certain amount of buzz. and this is one of the reasons why I wanted you on the show. And I couldn't get you on last week because you weren't going to see this early. And we're talking about, of course, the Glee 3D concert movie. First of all, give me your review of that.
Okay. So now the thing about Glee is... let me explain. I feel like Glee, there are essentially three different shows within Glee. There is the... really innocent, happy, everybody is special, and the losers are special, and everybody can be friends, sort of feel-good aspect of the show. Mm-hmm. There is the let's cover a lot of songs and sell a lot of singles and make a lot of money aspect of the show. And there is the aspect of the show that sadly was the reason I really started watching it, and that has really lessened over time, which was the darker, more black comedy aspect.
Yeah. We're selling drugs to go on a trip.
Exactly. There is a teacher who is a pedophile, and yet he ends up being somewhat heroic. Yeah. And you go back to like the first two episodes of Glee, and it has this really dark undercurrent. And even like when they talk about like the three different writers on Glee, and Ian Brennan was the one who really wrote, kind of was the one that birthed the original idea, and he based it, his biggest inspiration was the movie Election. And I love Election, and you can totally see it. Once you know that, you look at the characters even, and I mean, Finn is completely Chris Klein from Election, without question.
Yeah. Oh, totally. Yeah. I mean, it looks like him, too.
Exactly. It's creepy. I just hope he doesn't follow the same path as Chris Klein, because that would be sad. But, like, that aspect of the show, which I think is why a lot of adults, I think, found it really interesting in the beginning, and why it really was a bigger critical hit. And as the show's gotten more popular, they've realized, oh, hey, we can aim our show at a younger audience, which is great because they're going to stay with us for years. And they're the ones that are going to go to Claire's and buy, you know, the Glee t-shirts and headbands.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's a really weird tone the show has ended up having as a result. And what the movie does is the movie totally goes for that innocent, happy aspect of Glee.
It just goes even farther.
It goes for the tweens completely. And there's something sweet about it, because something it does is it's such a bizarre setup when you really think about the movie. But, you know, it's a quote unquote concert movie. And interspersed with it are these sort of three like real people who are fans of Glee, who all have like their own kind of, they're outcasts, or they're what you would expect to be outcast for one reason or another. And I almost don't want to spoil it, because they're actually good reveals when you, like, there's one girl who's a cheerleader and she's talking about, well, I identify with the cheerleaders on Glee. And then like they cut to her and you're like, oh, she's
I'm a lesbian.
No. It's even more. Oh, no. Should I spoil it?
Yes, spoil it. She's, I don't get spoilers. If you haven't seen the Glee 3D concert movie want it spoiled.
I'm spoiling. She is a little person cheerleader.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wait, how did you not know she was a little... Did they, like, shoot her really, really tight?
No, they're shooting her from the face up.
At first. And so they pull back and there's everybody taller than her.
And I'm like, oh, yes, her legs are little.
Wow.
So there's that. Because then they talk about, like, then it cuts to the cheerleading coach being like, yes, everybody thought we wouldn't get to nationals, but they didn't realize we could throw her up in the air really high.
I was about to say dwarf tossing. Right. It was huge on that. Oh,
I
my
know.
God.
So there's that. And there's another girl who, you know, you find out has Asperger's and, like, Glee has kind of helped her connect to people. And then there's another guy who talks about how...
I doubt that she's actually connected to people.
Well, you know...
I just think they could sit in the same room and be...
She hasn't, you know, interrupted them when speaking the way she might normally have before Glee. Yeah. So, you know, there's, like, this kind of sweet aspect to it, but it's so sweet. And the songs are all, you know, it's the concert tour, so it's just them coming out and singing. It does this really weird thing where it, like, everybody is in character the entire time.
Yeah.
But they'll show, like, snippets of them backstage, and it's, like, it's clearly all ad-libbed where it's, you know, Heather Morris as Brittany being pretty funny, like, but throwing out lines, and, like, the, you know, Amber Riley, who plays Mercedes, is next to her, and she's just kind of laughing, and you can tell she's laughing at Heather Morris, not as Mercedes at Brittany. So it's such a weird... construction for a film. Yeah. I think it will appeal to that, the younger Glee audience and the people that, I mean, if you really wanted to see the stage show and couldn't, which, I mean, a lot of people couldn't, it was expensive. I wasn't going to pay for it.
They sure as hell did not for the movie.
Well, that's apparently
made
true
less
too.
Than $6 million.
Yeah. I mean, it, I can, I'm not surprised it bombed. Just, I mean, movie TV to movie doesn't, am I wrong? Has it ever done well that quickly when it's still on the air like that?
Oh, Simpsons. I mean, The Simpsons did well.
I feel like The Simpsons, though, is kind of... I mean, The Simpsons has been out for 20 years.
I have my own theories. Not having seen the Glee movie, I have my own theories. Because what's funny is if you looked at the box office, and we're spilling a little bit into box office here, because it came in at 11th. And it was like Friday, it was like number 6, and it just dropped. And by the time all the numbers came in, it wasn't even in the top 10.
Well, I think,
it was beaten by The Change-Up. When it came out, suddenly Damage Control. Everyone's blaming this, but we didn't advertise this way. We didn't do this. Here's why I think it didn't work. It's because it cost $15 to see this movie.
Yeah.
And the people who are going to see it are in big groups, and they're like, wait, why don't we just wait a month and we can watch it on TV?
And I think it will actually do well on DVD. I think, you know, they'll put a pretty, hopefully, heavily featured DVD with backstage stuff and... expanded character, you know, to learn what happened to these kids that you met in the movie. And I think it is something that will be good for fans to have slumber parties and watch it. You know, going to it, and I've seen one other concert 3D. I saw the U2 film a couple years ago and for whatever reason.
Yeah.
And it's, I find concert movies weird. Just, I don't know. You're sitting in a movie theater and you got the 3D glasses on, and there's a concert, and you're like, do I sing along? Do I dance? People around me are just sitting here in their popcorn. I don't know what to do.
I saw the Jonas Brothers 3D concert movie.
Alone?
I actually took my kids were curious about it, so I'm like, I got to cover it anyways. I'll take you. And it was the most bizarre experience because girls were there, and it was just all girls, and then me with my kids.
And I was there
rubbing myself. No, I wasn't really. That would have been creepy. And not as creepy as when I went and saw Material Girls with Haley and Hilary Duff. And I was like, alone.
That happened? I didn't know that ever happened.
Yeah, that happened. I saw it in the theater alone, and there was like all these women with their daughters. And then me.
Okay. See, I get strange
in a trench
looks
coat.
When like, I go by myself to see Hostel or like Seed of Chucky. I get the kind of like, you know.
You're like, what are you doing?
Yeah, but you know, it's not creepy. It's just.
They're like, hey, baby.
Exactly. It's more
you like horror
like,
movies too.
You want some popcorn? And I'm like, actually, yeah, it's $5.
Yeah, he's like, I've been picking my nose and eating it with my hands. You
all
want
right,
some?
Well, can I reach in the bottom and get where all the salt laid down, but not that salt,
delish.
The other salt?
Yeah, but no, so when I saw the Jonas Brothers, it was bizarre because there were girls there with their they had the face painted, you know, and they had signs. I mean, like, that was the most ridiculous. Because
like,
first of all, bringing
they're not seeing you. They're not going to throw you can't throw your keys at them.
They're not going to see you. And then it's like, there's no cameras there either. So what is the point of the sign at a concert movie? So, I mean, that was a little, and I saw the Michael Jackson concert movie to review, but the problem is, it had this brief blip where it kind of gave you that experience of a concert. If they made the Hannah Montana concert movie now, it would bomb just as well. I just don't think these had much of a life ever.
Yeah, and I think the fact that the audience for Glee is also a little, it's, they're not old enough, but they're definitely older than Hannah Montana. You know, your mom is going to take you to see it.
Yeah.
With Glee, it's that more like tween range, but it's a little older than tween. And so I think it affects the audience. And I mean,
The other thing with Glee is, now, how was the 3D? I mean, because I'm assuming what they did is they had the video behind the scenes and it wasn't in 3D, and then the concert was in 3D, and you had, like, Lea Michele's nose, like, knocking people over in the front row.
Yeah, I actually still
row.
Have a kind of little bruise on my face from that. See, the 3D was not
And, like,
there.
Chris Coffer's upper lip just slobbering on people.
Yeah, no, actually it was a nice breeze when that happened. The issue with the 3D is just I mean, when I saw the U2 in 3D, it really did kind of feel like you were in a concert. Like, and this was a couple of years ago. I don't know what change or what decisions, how the style of 3D has changed. But with the U2 concert, they were all around you. And with the Glee concert, I didn't always know it was in 3D. The only time I would notice it was two times. Once when, like, people in the audience raised their hands and I really thought someone in front of me was raising their hand. I'm like, get your hand down. Oh, movie. And the other time, which I will say was the one great use of 3D. Now, we talked about boobs before.
Yes.
Okay, if you are a fan...
Heather Morris's tits
Heather come
flying
Morris's
out.
Tits are spectacular. My God. She does the Britney Slave for You, which I'm not a fan of because I hated the Britney Spears episode. But Heather Morris is really the best part of the movie, I would think. She's just charming, and anytime she's on screen, it's just you really want to watch her move.
Let
me
tell you, I love the Britney episode, and it had nothing to do with the music.
Right, exactly. But she comes out, and she's even, like, backstage in character, she makes a joke about how, like, I'm really excited this is in 3D, because my boobs are going to look great in 3D. And she comes out, and her boobs look fucking great in 3D. I mean, they're not, you know, they're covered, but, like,
bounce. There's a little bit of jiggle going on.
I looked at Erica, my co-host, and, I mean, we are both straight women, and both of us were like, holy fuck. I want to touch those boobs. They are amazing.
She has a fantastic, and she's a fantastic dancer, too.
She is, and she's charming. She's, you know, a reason to see it. I mean, everybody there is mostly having fun. There's some dead weight in the cast, and you can kind of
Well, there's some dead weight in the show.
Yeah, that too. You know, they do pick, for the most part, all the songs that are going to, that, you know, people really liked from the show. So it's a good song selection. Yeah. It's just a concert that feels awkward because you're not really there. It's a strange experience. I think, again, if you're a real fan of the show and really wanted to see the stage show, then, hey, you got like 5 days unless they yank it before then to...
That's supposedly two weeks, so...
Give some screens back to the Smurfs, I don't know.
Well, no, because you got this week, you got Fright Night, Conan, and Spy Kids, all 3D movies.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, it's everything's 3D.
Understand how and when this happened. When did we go back to the 1950s of TV's gotten really exciting because everybody's got a TV now. Now we need 3D. I do not understand how 3D has become something people, and granted, I paid for it for Final Destination, so I'll admit. I still say the only time I've ever seen 3D used in a way that really impressed me was, and this, sure, this plays into my thing, I guess, for dance movies, but I thought Step Up 3D used 3D really well.
I've seen Step Up 3, but I did not see it in 3D, but I've heard a lot of people say it's one of the best uses.
I mean, it's a total goofy movie. It is Break In 2, but with cell phones, because it is pure 80s cheese. It's stupid, but the dancing is amazing. But the way they use 3D in the theater, I was really impressed because you know, you felt like people were dancing around you. You saw movements that you probably wouldn't have, I think, the same effect in 2D. And that was really the only time that I left the theater being like, I'm really glad I paid $900 to see that in 3D.
Well, and that's the thing. This is something I've talked about a lot on the show, so I'll just recap for your sake. I love 3D. I love gimmicky 3D. I don't think every movie needs to be in 3D. If they rush to post-convert, it's shit. I don't like it. But my thing is, I think the prices are killing it right now. I honestly think that's part of the reason. If the Glee movie, if they weren't charging that extra premium, it would have done twice as well this week.
I would agree.
Because people would have been like, oh, well, that's economical. It's just they're trying to gouge the prices, and I think it's hurting it. Not every movie needs to be 3D. I don't have a problem with 3D. I actually like it, but it needs to be done. It needs to be decent. I mean, like Final Destination, I was totally fine with that being in 3D the last two, because I'm like, I didn't like 4. I thought 5 was okay.
Oh, I had an issue with the 3D in 4, because, and I say the same thing for Saw 7, I thought when I found out both of those movies were going to be in 3D, I'm like, well, great. They both, like, could totally use it well. And I thought both of them really just didn't do anything interesting with it.
Yeah, Final Destiny 5, right,
I thought was definitely an improvement over 4 in terms of the 3D. Mm. But the sad thing was I watched Final Destination 4 on DVD the other day, and I couldn't believe how bad anything that you could tell was made for 3D looked. Oh,
it's a turd of a movie. Oh, man,
and that's a shame, because like Final Destination 5, I'm like, I can't wait to watch that at home, except it's going to look like shit.
I don't know. I mean, I like 3D. I just think they're gouging the price, and everyone's like, oh, this is how we're going to make money. And if you look at every single 3D movie except for Smurfs that opened this year, it's domestically not clicked.
Well, they said, Final Destination 5 had like 75% of its ticket sales were for 3D. But that was kind of like a step back from most of the rest of them that have been mostly from 2D prices.
Yeah, but even then, it's like it only made $18 million. Yeah, it made 70% of what the last one did. So it's not even, I mean, it's like these movies are coming in soft because people just don't want to pay the money for them. And I think people are, and because you're getting the DVDs coming out, Blu-rays even, that's the thing. That's the other thing that's hitting it is Final Destination. If you don't care about the 3D, you can wait till it's on Blu-ray. It's going to look just as good if you got a nice TV.
Very true.
Glee 3D, same thing. Whereas back in the days when you had a 25-inch TV or this crappy like rear projection unit or something like that, now this home theater is so much better.
Oh yeah.
So I don't know. I think that's my problem with Glee. And I'll tell you that just my little analysis. Since of course you're the Glee person, you're the Gleek, sort of pseudo Gleek.
Soft K.
When they said. When I watched, I got like the first, Fox sent me the first half of the second season to review on DVD, and I was watching behind the scenes, and when they talked about the Rocky Horror Picture episode, and they're like, and one of the, whoever was directing it or whatever says, he's like, well, he didn't want to offend too many people, so we kind of had to change some things, and I'm like, that's where you went wrong. Yeah. That is when the show fell apart. And then like there was another, and then the other thing is it's got too preachy. It's gotten so it realizes that we can now affect social,
we can make a difference, which is great if it's done the right way. And and sometimes it was.
But the other thing, they had the one episode where it's like everyone be who you are, and they all got shirts that said what the problem was, and like I remember Matthew Morrison, so he said he butt chin and stuff like that. Yeah. So you had some people who were like, and like it was, I think it was Mercedes. She had Diva, and I'm like, why don't you just have it say "Can't stop eating cake"?
Well, that's, you know,
Be honest.
The Mercedes character is a huge issue for me anyway, because there is an episode where she's kind of crying about how she doesn't get solos and why is it that I'm just as good a singer as Rachel and yet I'm not the one on stage? And like the answer is it's because you're shy and too nice. No, the problem is you are overweight and you are black. And I'm not saying those are problems, but I'm saying that's what the episode should have been about. Like,
it's an
that's
image,
something to
it's,
address, yeah. And it won't do that. And
yeah,
you know, but
that's
time,
the thing. It's trying to do it, but then it's like soft
then
handling
it steps
and
back. But I mean, they've done some. You know, the way they've handled like the Britney Santana kind of bisexuality stuff has been
awful.
Really progressive and sexy.
See, I don't like. This is why I don't like that, because Santana I thought was a really interesting character because she's just a rock hard hard bitch. And then she's like, oh, well, I'm that way because I think I'm a lesbian. And then suddenly I'm like, oh, my God, they're giving her depth. And she's lost all interest to me.
But, Kevin, just think about how much more interesting that's going to make the official Glee porn when it comes out.
Well,
And it is coming out. Don't worry. We're trying to get our hands on it to review. Anyway.
It's like when I love Sue Sylvester when she's mean, but then they kind of give her a heart.
They're like, well, we can't make her be too mean.
And then she's like, oh, well, she has this mentally challenged sister, but then she died, and so now she's going to be mean.
Just killed
and
her, really.
I'm just like, what is going on here? Do they realize that, like, oh, we got to write ourselves out of this corner?
Honestly, have you watched The Glee Project at all?
No.
The reality show? The thing, it is the most illuminating thing, because they keep showing Ryan Murphy, who's the creator and one of the writers, mm-hmm. And he's sitting there, and he always cuts the kids and everything. And the way he flips, like, nothing. Like, one guy on the Glee Project is like, well, he didn't go home. His problem was he was nervous kissing a girl because he has a girlfriend and he's Christian.
Okay.
Then don't be a fucking actor, obviously.
Yeah, that's or be Kirk Cameron.
Yeah, and Ryan Murphy sits there, and at first, like, the kid sings, and the kid's like...
Ryan Murphy should have gone up and just made out with him and be are you okay
sexy?
With that?
So Ryan Murphy hears the kid sing, and he's like, I'm kind of done with Cameron. And then the I think.
Wait,
Cameron,
his name was actually Cameron.
Cameron. Yeah, yeah.
Cameron. Oh my God.
Bananas. So then Cameron. I'm going to call him Kirk Cameron from now on. Starts talking about like, you know, well, I'm Christian, blah, blah, blah. And then Ryan Murphy like is like, that's really interesting. I've always wanted to write a Christian character. Which apparently you need a Christian actor to write a Christian character, which I didn't know. But
yeah.
Then the next week, Cameron tries to quit. Cameron says, you know what? This isn't for me. It's not working with my faith. It's not working. Maybe I don't want to be an actor. Maybe I want to be a singer. He walks off. Ryan Murphy is like, no, I want him now. Because the kid was going to quit the show. And that somehow intrigued Ryan Murphy to then give the kid a cast, a part on Glee.
Then he should have totally made out with him then.
Again, wait for the Glee Project official porn DVD. Because I'm sure that's coming too. But
yeah,
it just
I don't
goes
know.
To show so much of how they have no idea what they're doing.
Something else that happened when I was talking with... last week I had on the show Tim Buell from the Golden Briefcase. He made the point. He were talking a little about the movie because it was coming out. Mm-hmm. And he's like, well, I like the whole the underdog can make it aspect. And I'm like, that's cool. So, but here's the problem. Lea Michele is a fucking diva.
Yeah.
Because she's on Glee and she beat out so many other people. I mean, I don't know how many people they had. And I'm not just Lea Michele, everybody on the show. Mm-hmm. That's the way the business works. That's how it is. And you have to be at that level. So, you know, I mean, you want to see the underdog win. Take like an underdog and recast like the Rachel character with an underdog and see the claws come out, because you'd be like, no, 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 the underdog doesn't win this part.
Well, that's what I'm hoping, because there's one girl left on the Glee Project who's like a mini Lea Michele. And I'm like, I want her on the show, because it would be dynamite if the two of them, like, because you know they would hate each other in real life.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, because, I mean, I spent a lot of time doing, I did theater, and I did musical theater in high school, and a little bit of stuff in college, and I knew a lot of people then.
Yeah.
And I'm like, it is the cattiest,
yeah,
just the most competitive thing. So to have this veneer of, oh, anybody can make it, yeah, no, you
not
can't.
Not really so much.
You know, if you're the fat kid... Who's the other fat girl?
Lauren.
And I say that because that's who she is, and that she is the fat girl.
Oh, she's the fat
who's
girl, yeah.
Banging Puck, you know, or is she? I don't know.
She still is at the moment. I don't know. They've never actually established.
Are they actually doing it? Yeah. So they're like, and so if you're her, you're not going to make it on Broadway unless you're getting parts as the fat girl. Sorry, that's just the way it is. It's kind of like when they did Ugly Betty on TV, and they're like, oh, Ugly Betty, and oh, it's just everything. But guess what? Then suddenly Merrick Ferrer's losing weight.
Did she lose like 30 pounds?
Yeah.
Like a little sex bot. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I don't know.
It's a problem. And I mean, they dealt with it. I like those episodes this season when they were kind of like, oh, we're not the underdogs anymore. Like, uh-huh. You know, and they kind of approach that, but not fully. And I'll be curious if they get back to it.
Yeah. Anyways, I think we're done talking about Glee. Are you good? we talk a little bit about, real quick, about the box office. Rise of the Planet of the Apes took it again, but barely snatched out of the hand of The Help, which
predicted, did you not?
Surprising. I thought The Help was going to win.
Yeah.
But you know what? If The Help had come out on Friday, it would have won. But it came out midweek.
Yeah.
So I think it would have had that little extra.
The book clubs already took their Wednesday matinee.
Yeah. So, but it was still, that was a good movie. Final Destination 5 came in third, then Smurfs, then 30 Minutes Are Left right in the middle, did not do very well, and then Weigh It Down at 11 is Glee. What do you think is going to win this weekend?
I don't know. It's a hard weekend to predict. I feel like Fright Night, if it gets good word of mouth, yeah, might end up being like number two and then number two again. I don't know. I guess Conan, but... it's a weird week to predict, is it not?
Here, I think Conan, Fright Night are going to be a horse race, and they're going to be like at 18 million.
Yeah,
and
it's not
going to
be a huge
gonna win,
weekend for either one of them. I don't think.
And then like Rise of the Planet of the Apes is going to be like 15 million. I mean, I think it's not. I don't think Apes is going to win a third weekend, because if they suffer a similar 50% drop, you're talking like $12-13 million.
And I feel like a lot of the people who would go see Apes now are going to be curious to check out Fright Night or even Conan. Like that's in a way, all three of them kind of have a similar retro audience.
I think Fright Night's going to work better because it speaks more to the teen audience.
Because they're going both ways. You're going to have the people that remember the original and are curious, and you're going to have the teens. Yeah.
Well, and if you consider it very similar to Final Destination, R-rated horror movie, 3D. That made $18 million last week. I think it's at least good enough for that. And Conan about the same. It's going to be between 15 and 20 for Fright Night, Conan, Planet of the Apes, and The Help. Who knows? The Help might win.
Yeah.
The Help might get $20 million next week because I think this thing's going to have legs.
It seems so. Like. I mean, the buzz on The Help is either you have people who are saying it's wonderful and great to take your mother and Easter egg bonnet wearing grandma too, and then you have the people who are looking at it. Indeed,
grandma.
You have the people who are looking at it the way like I saw The Blind Side, and I haven't seen The Help, so I don't know. Yeah. But I know a lot of people who are calling it like, oh, it's one of those really racist movies about racism.
Oh, so I don't know. I've heard that whole thing because people are like, I've read that people are like going, oh, it's only because of the white people that they can win. I'm like, well, you know, in Jackson, Mississippi, in the South, you couldn't do a whole lot when you're black. I'm sorry, because you got killed. Period. That's just how it worked. And the only way to, I mean, that's like complaining about history because it's historic. You know, okay. I mean, it's not that it's I don't know. It's I mean, the Blind Side I think has a greater criticism on that, but I don't know. I think there's people who just want to complain about The Help. I was dreading it, but I actually kind of liked it.
Okay.
So anyways, that's what I think is going to win. Do you have anything else you want to talk about? Is there anything else that's bugging you about or on your mind about movies?
Ooh, I really hope Final Destination 6 gets made. Just cause.
Yeah. Just cause. I don't know. According to IMDb or Box Office Mojo, it had a $40 million budget.
But, you know, look at, like, I think you were talking about this recently, too. Piranha 3D bombed, and then they immediately greenlit a sequel for whatever reason, which is fine by me because I like Piranha 3D.
It's because it's the Weinsteins, I think.
Yeah, but they're normally so, you know, normally if something doesn't do money, they pretend they didn't actually make it, and then, you know.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think you're right, but that seemed like a Weinstein thing to do, but the problem with Final Destination is it's Warner Brothers.
Right.
And I just don't see Warner Brothers throwing good money after bad because you've hit the hump. You know, you hit like I didn't realize I thought The Final Destination did poorly, but it opened like at 20 some million.
Okay.
And this one opened less and was basically the same kind of movie. I think it
with
opened
less competition too in a way. Cuz I know the other Final Destination came out the same weekend as Halloween too.
Well, but that was Halloween.
Oh, I know. And I saw both Lord. And
No, but it also it came out like the same weekend. It was in like August or very close to August or September.
It was an August release.
Yeah. So, all right. Do you want to do the Fat Guy Five
Let's
now?
Do the Fat Guy Five.
Woohoo! Five favorite vampire hunters. Now we all both came up with our own lists of five, so we're gonna go back and forth. It's gonna actually be a 10 because we're overachievers this week.
Yeah, nerds.
I know. We're such geeks. Do you want to go first or shall I?
I'll go first. Sure.
All right.
Okay. I'm going to go first. I'll work downwards from my list with, I'm going with the Underworld series, which I've really only seen the third one. And I was surprised that I assumed I would hate these movies, but I didn't. Mm. And, the vampire hunter in that movie that I kind of have a crush on and surprised me was Michael Sheen as Lucian, the werewolf.
He's the best thing in the series.
He's the best thing in the series. And the fact that it's Michael Sheen, who is from The Queen and, you know, Wesley Snipes on 30 Rock, playing like a shirtless, badass, you know, werewolf killing vampires is kind of sexy. And plus, he's actually defended the movies in publication, which I really respect, where people have kind of looked at interviewers. I read interviews where they were looking down upon the movies. And he was like, dude, I love the Underworld movies. So for that alone, I give it to Michael Sheen.
I liked Michael Sheen anyway. I think he's a good sport. For my first one, I'm going to actually do mine completely out of order. I'm going to just throw in there similar thing. I'm going to give a little bit of props to Jacob Black. Taylor Lautner, of course, from the Twilight movies. I absolutely just hate Kristen Stewart in those movies. Mm-hmm. I absolutely hate Robert Pattinson. I like Jacob Black. I like Taylor Lautner. He's not a good actor, but he works in there.
He's and really I just worked like, to be muscular, so you got to give him something for that.
I love the fact that their character is just they just like when we go through puberty, we cut our hair, get ripped, and then just kill the shit out of vampires. It's the only good part of the movies. The rest of it is like whining and moping and fixing motorcycles.
Don't make me revisit those, please.
Yes. So what's your next one?
My next one will be from a classic of the 80s, which would be The Lost Boys, and I'll go with the Frog Brothers. You gotta go with them. Little Corey Feldman, all proud to go hunt some vampires.
He talks like this the whole time.
Yeah. They're just cute.
Talks like Batman from the new version.
Yeah, if I were a vampire, I would kind of want to get killed by, like, yeah, a little Christian Bale imitating Corey Feldman pre-Christian Bale fame.
That's right. He was psychic. Mm-hmm. My next one I'm going to say is Blade, because yep. I like the fact that he's a vampire or a night or daywalker vampire-ish thing hunting other vampires. And I like the Blade movies.
Actually, self-hatred there.
You know, believe it or not, my least favorite, Blade 2. Everyone's like, oh, but that's Guillermo del Toro.
You know, I've only seen the first one.
The third one is just awful, but in a good way. Okay. You might like it because you love that kind of stuff.
I do. I love bad movies.
It's terrible. It's so dreadfully bad, but it's like strangely enjoyable.
Okay. That's going on the list.
Like, oh, good.
My number three, I'm going to go with a Robert Rodriguez film. This was one of his hits, I guess, or one of his, you know, it worked for him. And that is From Dusk Till Dawn, which I love because it's such a, I love that it's a genre mishmash. I love that clearly Robert Rodriguez was just trying to get people he liked to be in his movie. So you have, you know, Fred the Hammer in there killing vampires. But my vampire hunter in there is George Clooney, who is just badass and really sexy in that movie.
The funniest thing I find about this is what I fixate on with, like, From Dusk Till Dawn, because we just watched it. We live tweeted it a couple weeks ago.
I missed that.
When they are, like, decking out and all the vampire killing equipment that they sort of put together in the back room, and you got, like, the one person putting holy water in condoms, and I think Juliette Lewis has the crossbow with wooden arrows. Mm-hmm. George Clooney gets this jackhammer with the slowest moving stake ever on it, and that's going to be the effective weapon against the vampire. I mean, the first one, the jackhammer's got to be like 110 pounds. And it's just, I remember even when I first saw that movie, I'm like, well, that's just silly. Yeah.
This man's never going to go anywhere.
It's not going to do a damn bit of good, man.
Go back to the hospital, whatever your doctor's name on ER was, George Clooney.
ER. Oh. So, but yeah, no, I think that's a good one. I'm going to say my next one is Buffy Summers.
Of course.
But for me, for anyone who knows me, I'm not a big fan of Joss Whedon. I like the character of Buffy from the original film. I like the original film.
I like the original film. I am a Joss Whedon fan. I am a big Buffy fan. Mm. But I know the original film, I think, is still a really fun and cute 90s watch.
Yeah. I feel like when it comes to, like, Joss Whedon, I feel like the person who just doesn't like chocolate. Have you ever met somebody like that, and they just, like, they don't like chocolate, and they're just like, no, I don't like it. It's not good. Everyone's like, chocolate's awesome. I, like, rub it all over myself, and you're just like, yeah, it's not for me.
And it's those people are weird because they're always really skinny, or, like, they're very pale often. It's bizarre, and I don't trust them. And you're right. Yeah. You're kind of a terrorist that way.
I am. And getting back to the people who are, you know, too skinny or whatever, have you ever run into somebody who goes, oh, I was so busy today, I forgot to eat.
How the fuck do you forget to eat?
I know. I've said this. I've been so busy I've neglected to eat, or I've been so busy I haven't had time to
eat. I have forgotten to brush my teeth. I've forgotten to put on deodorant. I've forgotten to lock my door or feed my cats. I have never forgotten to eat a sandwich.
Who sits there? And that'd be like, to me, it's the equivalent of sitting and somebody comes home at the end of the day and you're just like, wait, what's going on in your pants? I was so busy, I forgot to take a shit. Oh, my God. And I just filled my pants.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously.
I don't believe those people are human. That's my theory on it.
They're aliens.
Yeah. Like, that's one of the ways you can tell.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Have you forgotten to eat today? I'm going to kill you.
Right. Now I know that this liquid will actually burn through your gills.
Speaking of bizarre alien invasion stuff, I was this week, my wife wakes me up in the morning because she's like, oh, my God, the car battery's dead. And I'm like, oh, really? So we had to deal with that. And I jumped it, and she ended up getting to work. She had to get somebody to jump it to get home. And so then we took it into the auto parts store to get a new battery. And they have to test it because it was under warranty and everything. Mm-hmm. Usually I asked the guy, he said, usually they get about 4 to 6 people a day coming in saying they need a new battery. He had, like, almost 20 come in that day. And, like, when we were in there, it's like people kept coming and going, my battery's dead. And I honestly felt like I was at the beginning act of an alien invasion movie.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, what happened?
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah. It terrified me. So.
And really, you just got the battery fixed and that was that.
And that's it. Now we're done. No aliens invaded. There were no tripods walking around. Well, it was a weird thing to happen. I'm sorry.
That's all right.
Shall we move on?
I'm on my number two.
You're on number two. Go to number two.
All right, my number two from a movie I just watched recently that just came to DVD. Big hit amongst the indie horror crowd this year, and that was Stakeland.
Nice.
Have you seen it?
I have not. I keep getting it confused with Skateland.
My God, why would movies do that in a year? Isn't that awful? Yeah,
at least it's not like they had like Last House on the Left and First House on the left,
or and then like, Last House on the right, and then you're like,
like Last House on the right
was, and the other one was, they make me pudding.
Well, yeah, they're like, oh, come on in, it's a kids movie. Just go in the wrong film. That would be
awesome.
Things
can be worse, but Skateland. I loved it. I am a post-apocalyptic fan, so if you're of that persuasion, it's up there. And just a very good indie film. If you've seen Mulberry Street, which was the writer and director and the actor who I will talk about in a minute, it was their other
film,
which
house.
Also actually featured kind of a vampire-y monster. And Stakeland, just a very good like sort of portrait of like, you know, maybe a post-apocalyptic America, much like the one I know. And anyway, the main character is named Mister. He's played by Nick D'Amici, and who was also in Mulberry Street. This guy, probably in his like late 40s, 50s, he's the co-writer of the film, and just has one of those great faces that you don't see get enough work anymore.
Yeah.
And he's just a badass vampire killer.
Is his favorite music by Mister?
It probably would be if they still had radios.
Another 80s reference. There you go. My next one is, I'm going to say Roddy McDowall from the original Fright Night.
Yeah.
The original Peter Vincent, who is a has-been actor, was on shitty TV show and actually got a chance to use his vampire killing kit.
Yeah.
He was awesome.
Roddy McDowall just is one of those like little secret ingredients to make any film better.
If the only thing that could have made it better is if he did it with an ape mask on.
Yeah. I wouldn't argue. I would not argue.
All right. What's your number one?
All right. My number one would be... the man himself. My number one is Jesus Christ Vampire Hunter from the
Jesus
film
Christ.
Jesus Christ colon Vampire Hunter.
Wow.
Have you seen it?
I have not. I've heard a lot of things about it.
I saw like the DVD box, I kind of thought, oh God, this is just going to be like trying to be stupid. Yeah. And I watched it and I actually thought it was really sweet.
Oh.
It's, again, totally low budget. Yes, it's goofy for the sake of goofy. Jesus eventually teams up with a luchador wrestler to fight the vampires who are killing all the lesbians in California because nobody cares if the lesbians die. So it's this whole, like, Jesus is fighting to defend the lesbians. So
wait, were they killing real lesbians or just, like, porno lesbians?
No, they were killing, like, just lesbians.
Because I was going to say, I know a lot of people that care about porno lesbians but don't care about... like,
no, a lot of the lesbians in this movie weren't that good looking. Like, they weren't like Britney Santana lesbians. They were more
like... that's the whole thing. I mean, like, you know, lesbians care about other lesbians, but...
Right,
it's only, you know...
We only care about the hot lesbians, generally. But Jesus Christ, apparently, in this movie, cares about all lesbians.
Aww,
ugly
that's so
or not.
Sweet of him.
And it actually is. And there's a song and dance number where he sings and dances, and it's wonderful. And it's, I mean, it is a kind
it
of...
It sounds like Hamlet 2, the sequel.
But it has a more sweetness than Hamlet 2,
I think.
So it's one I recommend. It is low budget, but there's content behind a low budget, I think. So I think it's actually worth it. And the character of Jesus Christ comes off as like such a like, yeah, I can understand why people worship that dude.
I could get behind that.
Yeah, right?
Rock on. Some of these people in the media just don't know what they're talking about.
Right? You're a happening dude.
Oh, that's great. My number one, before we go to a break, is Peter Cushing's Van Helsing. Now, there's been a lot of Van Helsings out there. There's the old white-haired dude from the original Dracula. Mm-hmm. There's, there's Anthony Hopkins as Dracula. There's Hugh Jackman as Van Helsing in Van Helsing. No. It is Peter Cushing in the Hammer films, which is what actually Peter Vincent was based on.
Right.
So, yes, he's
you go
the
back
best.
To the
he's
source.
My favorite.
Yeah.
My favorite vampire hunter of all time.
I bow to that.
So, cool. Well, we better go to a break. And when we get back, we're going to have to do DVDs.
Woo-hoo.
welcome back to Fat Guys in the Movies. We are in the last segment. And if you're on the radio and you're listening to this and you don't want to be offended, you can go back and listen to what we had to say about the Glee movie and more about Fright Night and great
and
vampire
gambling
killers.
Gambling in Las Vegas.
Yeah, we went off the rails at some points. It was not as clean as we've done in the past, but not as dirty. So you win for kind of getting us right in the middle.
Okay, I feel like I've just taken like a bath, but not a scrub.
Yeah, it's like a bath, but like in hard water.
Okay, a bar of soap as opposed to body wash.
Yeah. You don't come out smelling like sun-ripened raspberries. You may just come out smelling like Irish Spring.
Okay, I can handle that.
Irish Spring. That was the worst. That wasn't even Italian.
All I got is high today. Irish accent. So I'm no better. Yeah.
But anyways, what do we have now coming up now?
It's time for the world famous DVD roundup.
That's right. You know, I'm going to let you go first because you're the guest.
Oh, why, thank you. A lot of not exciting DVDs coming out this week, and then a lot that are exciting, but then you realize they don't have anything special to them. So my new pick would be John Carpenter's The Ward. I haven't seen it. I've heard really bad things, but it is a John Carpenter movie, so it's got to have something, right?
The vampires.
Right? No special Ghost features on it, though. Yeah, I don't know, maybe. It's one of those, like, I hope. My, like, real actual recommendations, there's a bunch of Stallone Blu-rays coming out, including Cobra, which, yeah, Cobra.
I have to watch Cobra because I heard on Grey Drake's show that they were covering it, and it just sounds ridiculous.
Amazing. It is. I mean, the 80s were a very different time for action movies.
And he cuts pizza with scissors, doesn't he?
I think so. There is just limbs flying everywhere in it. It's amazing. Wow. But then my real heartfelt recommendation is one of my favorite family movies of all time. And I actually already have it on DVD. I don't think the Blu-ray adds anything. But however, if you don't own The Muppets Take Manhattan, it is your chance to own The Muppets Take Manhattan.
Yay.
It holds up. It's wonderful. Kids love it. Adults love it. It's great.
Awesome. I want to see that. It's been a while. I think they came out when they did that release with the DVD with like the Great Muppet Caper and the original Muppet movie.
It may have been around the same time. It was in its own DVD because I own it on DVD in a separate DVD case, but it may have been released around that time.
What studio put that one out? Was that Sony, wasn't it?
I do not know.
Okay. Oh, we'll see. Okay. The Muppets are great. And of course, it's great because it leads up to the new Muppet movie,
which I'm so excited for.
So my big ones are the Big Lebowski Blu-ray. First time ever on Blu-ray. Get a chance to be with the dude again from Tron.
Is it loaded on special features? Is it worth the Blu-ray upgrade?
You know what? I haven't really had a chance to poke around a whole lot through it. It comes with a book. So it's going to have some more stuff on it. But it does come with that like Blu-ray book.
Okay.
That comes in there. So it's Universal, and Universal tends to
take care of it.
If they do a special release like that, now if they just came out with the Big Lebowski on Blu-ray and that's it, it would just be the movie.
Okay.
But then when they do one of these packages, there's usually decent stuff in there. I should know more, but I don't. I feel like a loser now.
How dare you? Yeah.
But there's also Dexter season 5. If you didn't get a chance to watch it on Showtime, not as good as the previous seasons, but you know they had to kind of do a recovery there. Yeah, but Julia
an interesting
Stiles,
season.
Julia Stiles is really good.
Oh, she got really skinny and her head's still big. It's very strange.
Yeah, she's kind of lollipop woman, kind of like Malin Ackerman. And a couple nods. Jane Eyre is out on Blu-ray. Again, I haven't watched it. It's on my stack here, but I haven't watched it because I'm not into period dramas. Then there's Priest, which I have seen, and I feel just awful for having seen it, but let's give it a nod.
Is it as bad as Legion?
It was in 3D. Legion.
Yeah.
No, it was, let's put it this way. It depends on what your level of what you like in a terrible sci-fi horror action movie. If you like it more down to earth, Legion's sort of more down to earth. It takes place on Earth and it's in this diner, but of course there's these demons coming after you. Whereas Priest is totally in the future and it's this sort of Judge Dredd, Stallone Judge Dredd world where he goes outside of the city. It's terrible. But I don't know if it's any better or worse than Legion.
Okay. I can't. Legion just hurt me. It was just boring, and that's nothing. I don't mind a bad movie,
that's the
but
worst
I hate
thing
it
to
if
do.
It's boring. Exactly.
Yeah, and then The Conspirator, which also is kind of boring, but it's Robert Redford. And the problem with The Conspirator is not a bad movie. It's a story of the trial on one of the conspirators,
the
who was a woman, for the assassination of Lincoln. But the problem with this movie is it's just... It feels like a Hallmark movie. a Hallmark TV channel movie that just no one remembers at the Emmys.
I gotcha.
It didn't feel like, you know, Robert Redford has this really high quality of, you know, they usually look very visually well done, and it just didn't feel like a big movie at all.
Strange.
Maybe that's what he's going for. Stinkers of the week. We got Something Borrowed. Did you see that?
I would rather eat an onion-filled sandwich with bodily fluids in it.
Broken glass.
Oh, yeah. Goodness. It just looked painful.
It's awful. It's so bad. And then there's also Hoodwink 2, Hood versus Evil, which if you've got to put that many puns in a title, there's something.
Good point.
I'm sorry. But anyways, review wrap-up, we have Conan the Barbarian, and we also have Spy Kids, All the Time in the World. Those get preemptive sucks because they didn't screen it for us. There's also Fright Night, which I said sucked, and One Day, which totally sucked. Next week, we're going to be doing Columbiana, which they're not screening for press at all, and Don't Be Afraid of the Dark, which they're only screening in the limited markets, and Our Idiot Brother, which is the Weinstein, so God knows what they're doing. It's going to be a weird week. Anyways, thanks again, Emily, for coming on. Tell us again where to find you.
You can find me at my website, deadlydollshouse.com, for lots of horror movie reviews. You can find me at Gleecast on iTunes, Gleecast with a K, or Girls on Film Radio on iTunes, and all of those places. I will usually talk a lot that spreads to other places on there.
Awesome. Well, thank you again, and we will talk to you guys next week.
Bye-bye.